Good afternoon. My name is Lori Scudder. I'm the editor of Medscape Family Medicine. I'm here at the American Academy of Family Physicians Family Medicine Experience, FMX, in San Antonio, Texas. I'm delighted to be joined today by Dr. Ernest Carter. Dr. Carter, could you introduce yourself to our audience?
Yes, I'm Dr. Ernest Carter. I'm a physician who's been practicing for more than 30 years, and I'm the deputy health officer at Prince George's County. I'm also a bioengineer, and I've been involved in telemedicine now for more than 25 years.
So, Dr. Carter, that's a good segue to my first question, which is, what is telemedicine? And how we hear terms like telehealth, e-health, virtual medicine, what are all of those terms, and how are they all the same or different?
Telemedicine is an element of medical practice where health information is exchanged via an electronic network to improve a patient's health status. Now, there's a lot of similarities between telemedicine and telehealth. Usually, when you talk about telemedicine, you're talking about using that tool to do direct patient care. When you talk about telehealth, that's broader, it's more encompassing. You can do health services using an electronic network. And when you do that, like for instance, when you're doing disaster relief or when you're doing health literacy, even medication reconciliation, that's a broad use of using health information over a network, and that's typically called telehealth.
So what are the categories then of telemedicine?
Well, there are three basic categories. One is teleconsultation. I think that's the one that most people are familiar with. That's the e-visit, where there's a two-way consultation from a doctor to a patient, and where you either use a video conferencing technology to do this, or you can do it just by storing an image and sending it to your doctor, and the doctor interpreting it and sending it back. That's a teleconsultation. Then there's telementoring. And in that example, that's when a doctor actually gets mentored by another doctor. Typically, it's a specialist to help them manage a patient. So, for instance, if you have a patient who has autism and you need help, you're in rural Pennsylvania and you need help to help manage that patient, you can then connect to a institution like the Kennedy Krieger Institute, where they can have a mentor come online and help you manage that patient without that patient having to come all the way into Baltimore. Then the last category is telemonitoring, and that's where you actually get data from a patient who's at home connected to some biosensor. It could be to a vital sign monitor. It could be to an electronic scale, a glucometer, where you're monitoring a certain bioparameter, and you're actually practicing medicine with the results that you're getting. So you can monitor your patient from home. So those are the three major categories of telemedicine.
And all of them have been around to some extent at this point in time. What do we know about the benefits for both the physician and for the patient of televisits?
Well, one of the primary benefits is that it increases the access to the physician. And for my money, that's the most important benefit. It allows the physician to keep their patient and to be able to interact with them on a frequent basis. Mm-hmm. And it allows the patient to be able to interact with their doctor anywhere they are in the world. So that's one of the major benefits. The other benefits are that it improves the quality. It keeps people healthier, especially if you create your virtual practice where you use telemedicine such that you can interact at the right time and in the right place to help that patient stay healthier. The other thing that telemedicine's benefit is that it can not only save money, but it can make money if you know how to set it up right and get your reimbursements correct and optimize your workflows.
Well, and that's the perfect segue to my next question, which is the nuts and bolts of I'm sold, it's a benefit. What are some of the practical things of implementing telehealth visits in terms of documentation, reimbursement? How is that done?
Well, the nuts and bolts of starting a telemedicine practice are, one, to envision what a practice would be virtually. you need to understand that, one, this is not a supplemental practice. This is part of your practice. It's not an adjunct. It's not an add-on. So just like you start a brick-and-mortar practice, you have to start to plan. You have to plan on what are you going to do to create your telemedicine practice within your virtual environment. You have to define your scope of work. What are services are you going to offer? You have to put your team together that's going to help you do this practice. That means your nurses, your staff. They all have to get together in a team. You have to lead them. And then you have to create an implementation plan. You have to say, how are we going to do this? You have to, in that, you have to create use cases and determine just how you're going to be sure that you satisfy the patient's illness, that you can do this in a time-efficient manner, and then you can get reimbursed. Because the three major outputs that you want from your telemedicine practice are, one, you want it to improve the patient's quality of health. Number two, you want it to save time. You don't want it to create more time on you. Lastly, it's got to make some money. It has to make money. If it doesn't make money for your practice, then it's going to be very hard to sustain it. So those are the major elements. But before I end this, one of the things I really want to emphasize is that you have to have a business plan for it, just like you do for your brick-and-mortar practice, because it is your business. It has to be sustained, and it has to work for you. One of the things we will talk about, and you haven't asked me, but I'm going to tell you anyway, this can make your life easier and not harder. This being able to create a virtual practice using telemedicine can make it easier. Some people think that it's going to cause you to have 24-hour access, you know, issues where people are calling you all the time. If you set your practice up correctly, you won't have to be available 24 hours. Your brick-and-mortar practice is available for set hours, so can your virtual practice be. If you want to do virtual practice, having other people to take your call for you, you can do that just like you do with your brick-and-mortar practice. So you can't think of this telemedicine, this virtual practice, as something that's a burden on your time. You have to think of it as like this is part of your practice. Once you start to understand that, it really becomes clear how to set it up. The other important thing that's really important about this is that you have to promote patient adoption, because patients are not going to naturally come to this. You have to have a plan for how they can use this. They won't just come to you and say, geez, you have telemedicine, can I use it? No, it's just like any other business that you have. This is a service that you offer to them. They have to want it. They have to know how to use it. It has to have ease of use. So when you're creating your virtual practice, you have to take into account the technologies that you're going to be able to use to make it easy for them and then easy for you. Now, on your side of the street, your adoption has to be that you have to have this practice so that it's not different than what you have right now in terms of how you do your documentation and your billing. So your electronic record and your practice management system that you use now has to be the same that you use when you're doing telehealth and telemedicine and your virtual practice. That's incredibly important. Why? Because if you have two different systems, it takes that much more time for you to do that thing. So if you were to create a brick-and-mortar practice, would you set up 5 rooms using one electronic medical record and practice management system and another 5 rooms using another one? No, you have to have the same. So that's what's going to save you time, and you have to work through the responsibilities and the workflows that for each scope of your practice so that when you do this, you can have a practice that can actually sustain itself. And last but not least, you have to create a quality improvement plan, because just like any other service that you start to offer, you have to go back and look to see whether or not, is it doing what I thought it was doing? Is it making money? Is it improving quality? Is it saving time? So those are the nuts and bolts.
And clearly there's a whole lot of components, and it's not just picking up the phone and talking with your patient. So what are some resources you would suggest that physicians who wish to implement this practice can turn to learn from the people like you who've gone before them?
I think the American Telemedicine Association is a great place to start if you wanted to start online. They have a lot of resources that you can use. The other is a government paid for absolutely free service that has been in this country for a while. They're called the Telemedicine Resource Centers. And you can go there, you can talk to people about starting a virtual practice, how to use telemedicine. They have all of the tools and resources that you need to when you first start out. But as you go down, down the road of creating an implementation plan, you're going to find that you're going to use some of the skills that you already have in terms of creating your workflows, but you also are going to need to understand about creating the business model around this. And that takes a little bit of effort, but there are a lot of people who can help you with that.
Well, thank you, Dr. Carter. You're one of the people who is helping us with this. We appreciate your time and you sharing your expertise with us. Thank you.
Thank you.